Mr. President, today we commemorate the 200th anniversary of the first meeting of a brand new entity, one referred to by that great English statesman, Gladstone, as that remarkable body, the United States Senate. The fact that this same Senate continues to flourish today is remarkable. For in 1789, many doubted that the Constitution under which it was established would endure beyond a generation or two. There were no examples in history to guide those who sought to build a republic based on the consent of the governed. There was no support in traditional political theory to encourage those embarking on this grand experiment. And yet this bold undertaking of representative government, confounding skeptics for two centuries, has succeeded. Much credit for that success belongs to the genius of those who framed our Constitution. But credit also goes in great measure to those who brought the Constitution to real life. That is the story of men more than words, specifically the men of the first Senate. When the roll was called in the Senate chamber at New York City's Federal Hall on the morning of April 6, 1789, 12 senators from the 11 states answered to their names. Should be 8 senators. Rhode Island and North Carolina had not ratified the Constitution. From New Hampshire, there was John Langdon, who had sold 70 hogsheads of rum to outfit troops for the Continental Army, and Payne Wingate, a Harvard-educated congregational minister. From Massachusetts came Caleb Strong. Connecticut sent 2 aggressive Federalists, Oliver Ellsworth and William Johnson. Pennsylvania's 2 senators were Robert Morris, reputedly the richest man in America, and William McClay. And William Few made the hazardous journey from Georgia. From nearby New Jersey came William Patterson and Jonathan Elmer. Richard Bassett represented Delaware. And with the arrival of Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, the Senate secured its first quorum. All told, 29 men would take their seats in the Senate during the first Congress. And though their nation was new, most of them were no strangers to statecraft. Most of them had signed the Declaration of Independence, served in the Continental Congress, or attended the Constitutional Convention. George Reed of Delaware had done all 3. All but 1 of these new senators had served in their state's legislatures. Many had been in uniform during the Revolutionary War. Only 2, Johnson of Connecticut and Wingate of New Hampshire, had been lukewarm to independence. Most, but not all, had been born in the American colonies. Pierce Butler of South Carolina had been born in Ireland and first visited North America as an officer in the British Army. The majority described themselves as landowners and planters and lawyers, and there were surveyors and merchants. These men are our colleagues, links in a continuous chain that stretches back 200 years, and the Lord willing, will extend ahead for countless generations. Reading their diaries and their letters, we feel a kinship that transcends the years. During the first Congress, one senator's house was robbed while he was away. Another's wife died, and William Grayson of Virginia died in office, the first senator to do so. They worried about children growing up back home without them, and about infants with measles. They grew weary during long sessions and complained about their lodgings. And one wrote home about the excellent pineapple he had tasted. On April 6, 1789, these first senators got down to business and immediately became embroiled in bitter squabbles. McClay grumbled that nothing was getting done, but he did not have our advantage of perspective. In fact, despite their differences, rooted in geography, ideology, and economic standing, those early members left an enormously impressive record of achievement. They counted the first electoral ballots, inaugurated the first president, and made certain that the president understood that their constitutional powers of advice and consent would not be trifled with. They established precedents at every turn. They passed the first revenue-producing bill, created the first executive departments of war, state, and treasury, recommended the 12 amendments to the Constitution, and arranged for the first census to count the nation's 4 million inhabitants. They established the first bank of the United States, passed the Judiciary Act, creating a system of federal courts, and decided upon a permanent home for the national government. The first Congress adjourned in March 1791 in Philadelphia, where it settled in for a 10-year stay while the new federal district was readied on the banks of the Potomac. Despite their differences, those first senators could look back with satisfaction. They had gotten a new nation on its feet and underway. They had faced the very real dangers of falling into anarchy or despotism, but they had triumphed. In one form or another, they had confronted for the first time challenges that would reappear in the decades ahead. These included secession, states' rights, constitutional amendments, admission of the new states, threats of war, military preparedness, inflation, depression, unfavorable trade balances, taxation, sectionalism, minority rights, government patronage of the arts and sciences, veterans' pensions, and, yes, congressional salaries. These first senators established a strong foundation that allowed a growing nation to address these problems through the next two centuries. And may we, in our own time, so discharge our duties that those who stand in our places 100 years from now will say of us, they did well. They faithfully discharged the trust that was confided to their hands.